afternoon. Welcome to today's talk. This month we have just two talks, and we will be speaking about managing our mind. So we will speak today about transforming negative thinking, negative thoughts. And in the next session we will speak about transcending waste thoughts, two different categories of thoughts which normally trouble us, don't they? One is negative thinking, and the other is waste thinking. We know it's not useful at all, it's not really negative, but it is going on, coming in the mind, and we don't know how to get rid of it, our concentration is affected, etc. Today we will focus on negative thought. But before we begin, we will have a little meditation. Some of you may be here for the first time, and therefore you might never have experienced this system of meditation that we practice at the Brahma Kumaris called Raja Yoga. But you can just follow the commentary, and I'm sure you'll be able to get a grasp of what it is. And those of you who are interested are, of course, welcome to come and take the meditation course at our center. So let us begin. You can relax yourselves a little bit. I sit comfortably. Letting my feet gently rest on the ground. Letting my arms relax. And my hands gently resting on the lap. I let the body relax completely. I feel a wave of relaxation flowing throughout the body, from the top of the head to the tip of the toes. And turning my attention away from the world around me, I go deep within. Deep within, into the inner world of the self. I go deeper and deeper within. To going to the center of my being. To the center of the brain. My entire existence merging into a point of light. The center of all life and consciousness. The soul, the spirit, a being of light, a being of peace. That energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. M- original and eternal existence of the spirit, of the soul. Just a point of light, a point of eternity. Spreading the light of life throughout the brain, throughout the body. Silent and peaceful. I feel the power of silence. And stabilized in this consciousness of being the eternal spirit, I take my awareness beyond this physical body, beyond this room, beyond this physical world of the earth, the moon, the sun, and the stars, until I see myself beyond space, beyond time, in a dimension of light. In a world of silence, and I see myself in the presence of God, the eternal parent of all souls. A being of infinite light, unlimited peace, unconditional love, shining down upon me like a beautiful living star. And I allow the light of the Supreme to flow into me. Filling the soul with light. Feeling the power of silence. Lost in this union between the soul and the Supreme. And holding on to this light and the silence, I allow myself to return back to this world of matter, back to this physical costume of mine, this body. And once again, I see myself seated deep within, inside the brain, the sparkling star, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears, spreading the light of life
throughout the brain and the body. Silent, peaceful. Peace, my original religion. Peace, my original nature.
The battery has conked out. Okay.
You see how it, I'll use the other mic to.
This
one
is about
sounding
really funny.
The sounding
loud. Okay. Yes. So today we will speak about negative thoughts, our experiences with negative thoughts, and how can we go about transforming negative thoughts in a way that is sustainable, in a way that we can work on it ourselves. Okay, this is fine?
Yeah, better.
Also fine for me. So, yeah, we will try and look at some simple things that we can use in our daily life to actually deal with negative thoughts in a way that is sustainable, in a way that we can use on a day-to-day basis. So we will look at negative thoughts, of course, as we have been doing from two perspectives. One is from the psychological perspective. Why do negative thoughts emerge? What is underlying these negative patterns of thinking? And then, of course, we will also try and see how spiritual understanding from the perspective of Raj Yoga that we use here can help us in dealing with negative thoughts in a more sustainable manner. So, our subject for today being negative thoughts. Let's take a minute. You can ask yourself, what is the roots? What are the roots of negative thinking? Your own experience. Why do we think negatively? Where do negative thoughts come from? What makes us think negatively? Yeah, spend a minute. Look at your own experiences with negative thinking. Be it with the self, be it with other people, be it with situations. And ask yourself, why is it that these negative thoughts emerge? Why do they arise? Okay? What are your experiences with negative thinking? Yes?
For protection.
Protection? What do you mean by that?
The negative thoughts, like trying to protect. It's not like they are protecting, but they think they're protecting me.
That means when I create negative thoughts, it's like I'm trying to protect.
Yeah.
Protect what?
Myself against disappointments.
Okay, very interesting. So what you said was, firstly, there are some disappointments. Okay, certain disappointments are there. And then negative thoughts are created to protect ourselves from the disappointments. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's very deep. How do you suppose negative thoughts protect us from disappointments? What is your experience, Parveen? How do they protect us?
Being ready for...
Facing the reality,
yeah,
is it?
Like being ready for not getting disappointed.
Okay.
So just get...
Thank you for bringing this up, but you've sort of brought in the conclusion at the beginning of the talk. Now I have a difficulty. Now I don't know what to do. You've said it all. Let's go back home. Let's just sit for the next hour and meditate, and let's just go back home. Now you know why you think negatively.
You said we had a minute to think.
I know. And you got spot on. Very good. But we will go, of course, into this experience of how negative thoughts sometimes can work as an ego defense. They defend the ego from anxiety. And therefore, they prevent actual transformation. We will speak about this as we go towards the end of the talk. Thank you for bringing this up. But certainly, disappointments are one of the aspects. Disappointments, anything else? Yes?
I think about it, we can learn to think negative from parents or somebody or... from old experiences?
We get some conditioning, that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
So one is, there is a sort of a conditioning that is happening. So we can learn from, of course, our own experiences of disappointment, etc. But also we observe others following certain patterns of thinking, and we sort of identify with that, and we repeat that. Yes, it is also sometimes possible. But obviously conditioning happens when I'm getting some reward out of it. So what is the reward I get? What reward do I get? I observe other people behaving or thinking or expressing negative thoughts, and I start repeating that same pattern.
Yeah.
What is the reward I get? Like, for example, many times in some cultures, it need not be a national culture, it could be an organizational culture. It could be the culture of a family. It could be the culture of a group within a larger group. Sometimes people have this. It's fashionable to be critical. So you ask someone, "How was your day?" Okay. You had a very good day. You were just partying before coming there, you know. But how was your day? Okay. The other also feels, yeah. So it's fashionable now, and if someone in that group comes and says, "Hey, my day was great," everybody is looking at me strangely. You're not speaking the truth, you know. You're not intelligent enough to understand that it was not okay. So it was a little bit like this. Okay, so there could be some conditioning also behind our negative thinking, certainly. What else? Yes?
My past experience.
What kind of experiences?
Might be a bad encounter, and that will start some negative thoughts again.
Yeah, so maybe we can also speak about disappointments. One is, of course, we can speak about personal failures and disappointments. But what you're speaking about is our experiences with others. So we have others' behavior, others' attitudes towards us that we sort of hold in the mind. And those experiences make us think negatively again and again. So when we see the person or when we think of the person, those negative thoughts emerge again and again. Yes, that could be one reason. What else? Yes, Peter?
If you come compromise yourself.
Ah, if you compromise yourself.
Yes.
So what do you mean by that, you compromise yourself?
I mean, it could be in different relations or job-wise that you may not have the ability to say no as much as you should.
Okay. So can we say disappointments with our personal disappointments in terms of where I'm compromising my own disappointments and failures, what I perceive as my failures? So these could be at the level of my own behavior. I compromising and adjusting myself unnecessarily or going against my values. So that could also be one experience of personal failure. Another experience of personal failure could be trying to obtain something out there, as in some achievement, and then not getting it. And then that also leads to a personal failure, yeah, in various forms. So yes. And anything else? Yes?
For strengthening your own ego by seeing like contradictions in the world.
Yeah, ego defense. Yeah, strengthening our own ego. So yes, we will speak about that again a little later. yes. What do you say?
Pain and sickness.
Yes, and what were you saying?
They confirm your negative picture you have of yourself.
Okay, very interesting. So we have some experiences of pain and sickness. You mean also physical pain and sickness? That creates these negative thoughts, so I don't know what's happening to me. What did you say? I forgot. Confirm?
Confirming the negative story you made up for yourself.
Mm.
So if you're not good enough, the negative thoughts can confirm the story.
Okay, so some sort of confirmation of an image that I have created, either about the self or of others. Yes?
Fear of the future. Maybe I'm not successful.
Yes, uncertainty, fear of the future. Maybe I will not succeed or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, etc. Uncertainty, fear. Anything else?
Desires.
And of course, we have disappointments because we have certain desires and expectations. And anything else? Someone else was saying something, yes?
Thinking, I mean, you start using your thinking to solve a negative feeling as if it was a problem.
I'm not able to get it very clearly. You said we see something as negative.
Suppose you have a negative feeling.
Yeah.
And instead of just sort of being with that, you say, this negative feeling, I don't want that. It's a problem. I have to think very hard to solve it.
Okay, all right. So what you're saying is I catch a negative feeling. And I can let it go, but then I hold on to it. And then I sort of try and go deeper into it. Yeah? So it is sort of serving some kind of a purpose in my mind in some way. That's what you're saying. I go deeper into that negative feeling. Yes, okay. That is, of course, one of the reactions that we take up. Again, that is connected in some way to ego defense. But we will speak about that a little later. Anything else? Yes?
Expectations?
Yeah, desires and expectations coming up from others. So for example, I can have certain expectations from others, which may not be very obvious, but of course when they are not fulfilled, I get disappointed, and then I have all these negative thoughts. I can have expectations from myself, and of course when they are not fulfilled, I have negative thoughts. And then we also spoke of conditioning. Some of you were speaking about conditioning, how we get conditioned to think negatively sometimes, because there is some sort of an identification with the people we grow up with, some sort of an attachment with the people that we grow up with, and therefore we believe by following the behaviors or the thinking patterns that they display, I will maybe be accepted by the group, or that's the right thing to do because I'm getting rewarded for it. And there could be many things. So we have various reasons behind our negative thinking, our disappointments, disappointments with others, some pain and sickness, coming fundamentally from an experience of identification and attachment, coming from desires and expectations. Sometimes we watch some television and we see something negative being reported in the news on the television and we feel quite negative. Some of us can get quite upset We start crying. Many times people, when they see a sad movie, they start crying. Why does that happen? We are watching someone else, or we are hearing of some other experiences of the world.
Identification of ourselves, maybe.
One of the reasons, at least what psychology would say, is we are seeing in some way a part of us there. We are identifying in some way. And at some level we understand that could be us. And that identification brings this emotion, the negative emotion. And then, of course, I start reacting in that way. And the way I react may not always be useful. Of course, it may motivate me to do something good for these people sometimes. But sometimes I just sit and feel bad, and it doesn't really serve any purpose. So that can also happen at times. So anyway, these are simple things we understand. There are some identifications and attachments that we develop because we hope to obtain something out of the situation or out of certain people. We have certain desires and expectations, and then when these are frustrated, I can start having negative thoughts. Now, let us try and connect this to what we spoke of in the last session. If you remember, in the last session, we were speaking about self-esteem and self-worth. Do you see a connection between negative thinking and self-worth? So, for example, where do desires and expectations emerge from? And why do we start identifying with certain people, situations, groups? Why do we start identifying? Where do we develop identity? And where do we have desires and expectations coming from?
Our values.
Sorry?
Our values.
Our values, yes. That is certainly a deeper aspect of that. Our values. But what values are we speaking about? There are cultural values, yes. Social conditioning, we have spoken about social conditioning, but what aspect of social conditioning brings out these desires and expectations? What are the desires and expectations we have? Connecting it to the thought, the talk, the last session that we had in self-esteem.
To be important.
Sorry?
To be important.
To be important. You spoke of conditioning also. So conditioning as in I'm learning certain things from my environment around me, because my environment teaches me what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad.
Okay.
And you spoke of?
Of being important.
Of being important. So when I follow the patterns of behavior and thinking and feeling that society or the group around me has set as the norm, then I have some sort of importance. Because I will be accepted in some way by others around me. So one of the roots for desires and expectations, of course, is our need for validation. You understand this word, validation? Validating myself. My existence has a validity, has an importance. And we all have this need for validation. In the previous session, when we spoke of self-esteem, we spoke of the different ways in which we try and validate ourselves, our own self-worth. So we can validate our self-worth through, say, for example, certain activities and achievements. Yeah, sorry?
Education.
Yeah, education. So I'm trying to validate myself, getting myself a good education. Using my abilities and skills, we've spoken about that. This is one way in which we try to validate ourselves. Another way we try to validate ourselves could be, of course, through our through people and relationships. So, when others give me importance, when others show me some kindness, others show me some love, I feel validated. My self-worth is validated. And, of course, we have spoken about how the need for validation fundamentally emerges from an experience of low self-worth. And this may not be very much available in our conscious mind. It is something that I'm feeling inside. But if I have this need to validate myself again and again, to prove myself in different ways, either through achievement, accomplishment, demonstrating my competencies, proving my point of view, proving that I am right, demonstrating these things to others. In some way, there is some emptiness operating inside that is motivating these behaviors. And I'm trying to validate myself again and again in the world around me. But that need not be the case with many people. For some people, they're not bothered about proving their competency and worth and achieving and going out there and winning things. For them, what is more important is that they are loved. That's it. And they find their validation in relationships. For them, relationships become a big thing. It's important for them to be loved, to be understood, to be accepted, to be embraced. Yeah. So that is one way in which they find validation. And we can find validation in many, many different ways. We will speak about these things today. So how do we go about trying to find validation through people and relationships? One is, of course, getting the praise and appreciation of others. So I feel good about myself. I feel I have a sense of self-worth. That could be one. In a very gross form, acceptance. But it could also be very, very subtle. For example, the expression of kindness. I want people to be kind. And it need not be just to me. I observe, I try to see that there is kindness everywhere. I want there to be kindness in the world. Anything wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Right? But then when I see myself getting disturbed, if I feel a lack of kindness, in some way, I am trying to get that validation for myself. It could be something as simple as a smile. Someone is not smiling at me. I am getting uncomfortable. Why am I getting uncomfortable if someone is not smiling at me? Someone is sitting very seriously.
Take it personally.
I take it personally. Why am I taking it personally in the first place? Yeah? I had a very nice case of two friends of mine, married couple. They went, after a few years of their marriage, they wanted to go out for a nice sort of postponed honeymoon. So they went to Rome. And when they were in Rome, they were sitting out there, summer evening, it was warm and nice for them, sitting out, and this man, the husband, is very quiet. He's sitting by himself, very quiet, looking into the distance. You know, in psychology, we speak of this introverts and extroverts. So the husband is the exact stereotype of the introvert, and the wife is, you know, the very good stereotype of the extrovert. So she needs to speak, she needs to demonstrate, she needs to be out there. And this guy is more, you know, withdrawn. And anyway, they're sitting out there, and he's feeling very, very contented. And you know what happens to introverts when they get contented? They become quiet. That's the problem. What happens to extroverts when they are contented? Out there, they want to speak about it, they want to share it, you know, with the whole world, what's happening, the wonderful experiences they have had. Yeah? So these are personality differences. Now, they happen to marry each other. So now, this guy is very contented, and therefore he's very quiet. She's very contented, and obviously she wants to speak about it. And she sees him very quiet. So now, is everything okay? Yeah. She sits for some time. After some time, is the food okay? Was the food okay? Yes, very good. What's happening, you know? Are you tired because you had a long walk in the evening? No, good walk. Now, every time he answers in a monosyllable, she's feeling more and more anxiety inside. What's happening? Did I do something wrong? Maybe I did something wrong. He's upset. Is he upset with me? Maybe I did. Oh, maybe I'm not. Oh, maybe he doesn't love me anymore. Is there another woman? You know, all these thoughts and fantasies she starts creating, then she starts getting upset. Then she says, why don't you say something? Are you upset with me? No, I'm not upset. No, you must be upset with me. Well, just say something. I'm not upset with you. I'm really okay. Then why are you not speaking? I don't want to speak. And they start fighting there. And they start fighting there. And a wonderful evening has been completely spoiled because she wants validation. And so because I want the validation, I am so focused on myself, I forget that the other also needs his or her own space. And, you know, they need to be free to do what they want. So the smallest thing is exaggerated, looked at in different ways, and it becomes a very big issue when actually in reality there is no big issue. And then in the process what we are doing is we spoil the relationship where it need not have been spoiled at all. And then we actually create grounds for there to be negativity through our own anxiety, coming from our own desire for validation. So as long as I am able to find this validation in the world, very good, no problem. But obviously, I will not be able to find this validation in the world all the time. And therefore, when there is a perception of not being validated, I can have various reactions. So psychology speaks about different kinds of reactions people can have when they feel they are not validated. And very interesting. Of course, it's a little simplistic to try and put everything in two, three categories, but it's a rough overall picture. One reaction that people may have, some people, depending, of course, on their own personality type and their own experiences of the past, the feeling is, I am not good enough. They take it very personally. I have not found the validation from the other. The other has not smiled at me, has not been kind to me, has not given me some approval that I was seeking, and therefore, I am not good enough. Now, what happens when I feel I am not good enough? Sorry? Yes? Yeah, you begin to think negatively. And sometimes, as you said, to protect the ego, to defend it, because the ego is feeling anxiety. Ego is my conscious personality, right? The conscious mind. I'm feeling anxiety. And there could be different reactions. But one typical reaction that we see from such an experience that I am not good enough is I move towards people. There is a movement towards people. I want validation, so I move towards people. I try and speak to them. I try and make them smile at me, so I feel good about myself. I try and make them say something nice to me. I fish for compliments. You know fishing for compliments? I fish for compliments. I want them to give me a compliment. And I can find very clever ways of doing it. Very, very clever ways of doing it. Yeah. So, for example, I've made some food. Yeah. And my wife is not giving me no expression on the face. So the very one is, of course, I can ask direct. So how's the food? You don't like the food? Or I can be very sophisticated. You know, the last time we had pasta in the restaurant was quite good, wasn't it? Yes, it was quite good. Then I'm waiting. Okay, what about this pasta? Say something about this pasta now. Come on, say it. I can find various ways. Fishing for compliments. If I get the wife is clever enough and she recognizes, okay, he wants a compliment. Ah, it's very nice, honey, beautiful. I feel good. And if the compliment doesn't come my way, the anxiety is increasing, yeah? Then I try various ways to please the other. I'll try and make something better and do something extra, be more generous towards the other. I want that validation. And I can end up doing some pretty absurd things in that process. So one reaction is, of course, I move towards people. And when I have this natural tendency of moving towards people, very often what can happen is then I open up my vulnerabilities to many people. And sometimes people being who they are, everybody has their own negativity. And I open myself up to be used and abused by others. And I may end up sometimes being used as a doormat. You know, people just use me. But I'm allowing that to happen. Because I want that validation from people and I'm willing to compromise. I can even then go against my values. I can start compromising on my integrity, on my values, because I want that validation from people. This could be one reaction. However, to accept this thought that I am not good enough itself can be quite painful. Yeah? So what could be the reaction to that? I don't want to accept that I'm not good enough. So what could be a reaction to that? Others are not good enough. And so in some form, the thought gets projected, and then I have the thought, that others are not good enough. I remember I had given an example, I think, in one of the previous sessions, but I'll repeat it again today because it seems relevant. So I was coaching this manager from an organization. And the problem was, he's working in the team with many people. And there is this other member in the team. Okay, and they get along very well. They've become quite good friends. So this person B and person A. Person A has this problem now, and he's come and met me. So this person B is working in the team. He's become very good friends with person B. After a certain point of time, person B develops some personal problems and pressures, family and all that, and therefore is not able to give as much time to the group and to the task of the group as person A believes is required. He's doing his own thing in his own way, but he's not able to be a part of the group meeting so much, and therefore his interaction with person A is not so much. Now, person A has become good friends with person B. And he doesn't know what is happening in the life of person B that much. But what he sees is the behavior. Till a few days ago, we were meeting and we were speaking and we were having a good time. Now, all of a sudden, I don't see this guy. What could be one of the perceptions that may come from a person who is seeking validation in a relationship? Either I have done something wrong, and then I'll try and find that out. Or I feel I've done something wrong, or I'm not good enough, and the person has distanced himself from me because maybe, you know, he feels I'm not good enough, but then that creates anxiety, and therefore it's projected. He doesn't care for, not for me, he doesn't care for the group. See, it takes a different level. So his feeling when he came was, I'm having a lot of trouble with this person because he just doesn't seem to care for the group. Which was not a reality, because I also knew the other person. He was doing whatever was required to do in his own way. It's just that the personal interaction between these two was not so much now, because he had other commitments. So now he starts feeling he's not good enough. His commitment to the group is not good enough. His commitment to the activities of the group are not good enough. And this is going on in his mind for some time. And then he feels, well, I'm a good and faithful member of this organization, so I should give him feedback. I should give him feedback and tell him that, you know, he's not showing enough commitment to the group and the organization. So he calls him up one day and he says, okay, you know, I think it's time we had a talk. So he says, okay, fine, let's have a talk. So he comes over and he talks to him and he says, and you know, he goes on. What would you do normally in an objective situation? You don't have any desires of getting anything from that person. You see someone who has been interacting a lot in the group is now not interacting so much in the group. What would you do if you were objective?
Is there anything going on here?
You ask. That's obvious thing. You try and find out. You know, of late I've observed that you're not so much there. Something happening? What's going on with you? No. So again, you know, the ego defense comes up. Because if I start asking, then I may discover that my perceptions were not accurate. And though I have created all these perceptions, and I'm very sure, and from that my ego is getting a sort of a boost. I'm defending myself against the anxiety of the inner experience that I'm not good enough. And therefore, I don't want to ask. This is the way I can very cleverly defend myself from all sorts of anxiety and confronting myself. So he does not ask. He just says, so you know, B, you know, I've been observing that this has been your behavior over the past few weeks. And it gives me a feeling that your commitment to the group is not good enough. And person B begins to explain, but you know, I've been a little busy of late. You know, and immediately, what does person A says? Well, I'm very busy. I'm also very busy, you know, but I'm giving my time, you know, so that's the least we can expect from you being a part of the group. And he goes on a little long lecture on the virtues of contributing to the group and being there for the group. And all the time, this guy was really surprised. And he says, what's happening? Why is this person coming to me with all these things? And you know, he had never even the slightest negativity towards this person, towards person A. But after that long conversation, of course, because he also has his own need for validation, person B. And his need for validation was totally, you know, not just not fulfilled, but he was even attacked in some ways. He perceived it. And his feeling was, this is completely unfair. Now, for him, he feels this person just doesn't care for him. There is no understanding, there is no compassion, nothing. He's only interested in giving him feedback, what he considers feedback. And that guy actually gets demotivated after that day, gets even more demotivated to commit to the group. Earlier he was doing whatever he could, now he doesn't want to do anything. So the purpose, if the purpose was to motivate the person to contribute to the group, that was not fulfilled. Not just that, but the person has now gone against. And then the other person also spoke to me later. And he said, you know, earlier I could have done anything for this guy. Till that day, I could have done anything for this guy. He said, I got to know that he was having some trouble in his relationship, and I really wanted to go and help him, but, you know, my family problems were so much, I couldn't, but I wanted to. Now I don't want to. I don't even want to be in that group anymore. I want to be out. You know, I'm going to speak to my boss and try and get my way out of the group. So, I'm not good enough, projected onto the others, others are not good enough, and in that process, I can also, there is another reaction that people speak about, is moving away from people and moving against people. So one is, others are not good enough, my needs are not being fulfilled, I start avoiding that person. I move away to protect myself from any possible anxiety I may feel of meeting that person and not being validated. The other is, I move against that person. I can even attack that person. And in many extreme cases, we have a reaction that it's not that others are not just not good enough, but it's that others are against me. A more extreme reaction. Others are against me. So where I can actually start creating a picture in my mind that whatever they are doing is to deliberately harm me, create trouble for me, and to give me all sorts of, you know, nuisance. But in reality, that may not really be the case at all. So I can sort of then start. In this process, as we have mentioned, I exaggerate the negative. I actually deliberately minimize the experience of the positive in that situation and with that individual, because that in some way is giving me a defense against anxiety. It is giving me, providing me some sort of a defense to my ego. But what is happening? This is, of course, a very psychological understanding of things, yes. So I exaggerate negativity. Everything in the person appears dark and black, or everything in me also appears dark and black. That's the other reaction. I'm not good enough. And then I keep giving myself these thoughts that I'm not good enough, I'm worthless, I can't succeed in anything. And therefore I am maximizing, exaggerating my own perceived or even imagined negativities. Or the other side, I look at the other, I project my own problems onto the other, and I exaggerate their negativities, and that person becomes this big black demon. That person is capable of nothing good. And all the good things are conveniently screened out. Why are they screened out? Especially in close relationships. Some of you might have had that experience, yes? So you have close relationships. For some time, the person is so good, the best person in the world. After a year, the person is the epitome of evil. Hypocritical, I mean, whatever, you know. Just manipulative and the worst possible thing in the world. How can such people exist? What happened in a year's time? The person changed completely? What happened? So why does this happen? Why do we screen out all the positive things that we were seeing in the person before and see only the negative things and exaggerate these negative things so much? Why do we do it? Yeah?
I don't know. I think about the forgiveness. You can't forgive.
I have felt the hurt,
yeah,
which may even not be because of the actual actions of the other. The hurt may just be because I have perceived the other has done something to me because I'm not good enough or whatever it is. But whatever it is. And of course, that hurt is not very good. We don't want to feel hurt. And then from the hurt emerges the anger. And then that anger itself works as a defense of the ego. And then hating the other is justifying my anger, and therefore I am justifying that this is right, and I am protecting myself. I believe I am protecting myself from anxiety. But in reality, what am I doing? And this is where we go into the spiritual dimension. In reality, what are we doing? We are going against the original nature of the soul. Because the soul originally is not negative, and this is where spiritual understanding comes in. If we stick with the psychological understanding, we can understand all this. Okay, so the problem is, I have low self-worth. Wonderful, I've understood this now. And because of that, I need to validate myself through activities and achievement, through people and relationships. And then because I have this need, I have desires and expectations that I try to fulfill through these validations. Because I do get some satisfaction from this, I develop identifications and attachments to the people, to the things, to the activities, to the situations through which I can get validation. And so as long as I get it, I'm fine, but then there are many times I do not get that validation, and therefore I perceive that it's not good enough, I'm not good enough, others are not good enough, others are against me, and then I may move towards them and become dependent on them, or move away or against them and get isolated and develop conflicts from them. So when I'm having conflicts, I can understand it's coming from my low self-worth. But how does that help me? The understanding helps me to some extent, but how do I move forward from there? And this is where the spiritual understanding says, when I exaggerate the negative and I minimize the positive, what I am actually doing is I am further decreasing my self-worth. Because I am going against the original nature of the soul. And when if I am maximizing the negative in the situation, in the person, who is in control? Am I in control? Or is the person and the situation in control? Yeah? Who's in control?
Situation.
The situation is in control, the person is in control. So I have given up my control. My feelings, my emotions are being controlled from out there. If they are being controlled from out there, can I experience self-worth? And therefore, I further decrease my self-worth. And then what happens? This cycle repeats more and more. The more I lose my self-worth, the more I want to validate myself, the more I will try for that. And obviously, I will not always experience it. And therefore the reactions, and therefore the exaggerations, losing more of my self-worth, and then going on and on. And the vicious cycle continues to repeat itself. And when I exaggerate the negative and minimize the positive, obviously I'm losing touch with reality. So how do we bring about a transformation in our negative thinking? Now we speak about transforming. I have lost touch with reality. How do I bring about transformation now? Think positive. But of course, wonderful. Easy, isn't it? Just think positive. Simple. But the positive, as you said, is an aspect of, it has to be connected to reality. Otherwise, sometimes again, I can start thinking positively in a very superficial way. It's quite warm, isn't it? Can we open some of those little window things? Yeah, maybe some of those. So in the philosophy of Raj Yoga, coming from a spiritual perspective, we say for transformation to actually happen, I need a very clear realization. And you know, realization is made up of these words. What is real? Coming into touch with what is real. Bringing the real into an actual experience. Negative thinking, when it has taken over us, is usually a break from reality, because I'm exaggerating the negative, minimizing the positive, I'm not really in touch with reality. And therefore, to actually have positive thinking, to transform the negative thinking, I need to get back in touch with reality. And to get back in touch with reality, have that experience of reality, I need to first of all recognize the reality. What is the reality? And for a recognition of reality, I need some sort of an awareness, some sort of a model in my mind that I can use, some theory in my mind, an elevated understanding. In spirituality, in Hindi, there is a nice word, it's called Srimat. It's very nice. Srimat. And they say that if you follow Srimat, you become victorious. You become victorious. Shri is elevated. And Mat is like an opinion or a belief or a point of view. So when I have an awareness of the right perspective, I have the right perspective, a right point of view, which is elevated, I can use that point of view to recognize the reality. And then I can have the realization of that reality, which will bring transformation. So, awareness requires, we can say, the power of knowledge or insight. In the philosophy of Raj Yoga, we have, the whole philosophy of Raj Yoga can be condensed into three fundamental concepts. The first is the knowledge of the self, the soul. The second is knowledge of God, the Supreme. And the third is the knowledge of how this world functions, the knowledge of karma, the knowledge of the cycle of life and death that we experience around us. So these three fundamental concepts are there. And the understanding that we have in Raj Yoga is to really bring about a transformation, I need the awareness and the recognition of all these three very, very clearly in my mind. Mm-hmm. When you do the Raj Yoga course, of course, you go over these concepts. We don't have the time, obviously, to go into them in detail. But the first thing about the soul, the recognition of the soul, the recognition that deep inside, there is this fountain of goodness that is there. That is my original nature. And therefore, when I am getting trapped in negativity, I am distancing myself from that deeper reality within me. And that is the reality of the spirit. So, the awareness of that, of this understanding of the soul, then you have the other power that we can use in transformation, that is the power of discernment. Recognizing, where is that negativity coming from? Whatever negative thought I am having that is troubling me, where is it emerging from? Which kind of, it is not enough just to say that I need validation from the world. We all need different kinds of validation from the world. So what kind of validation am I searching for from the world? Is it validation in relationships? Is it validation when others show some kind of a consideration or affection towards me in different ways? Is it validation through proving certain competencies and skills? And therefore, when I see someone else who has the same competencies and skills, I feel threatened, insecure, uncertain? What is it? The clear recognition of what is the anchor of my ego validation? How am I using it? For that, obviously, I need that experience of meditation, the experience of silence, and of course, the knowledge. And then I need the power of experience, which will give me the realization. It's theory to say that deep inside, in the depths of the soul, there is this fountainhead of purity and love and peace. It is one thing to say it. It is another to actually experience it. And only when I can actually experience it, can I bring about a transformation sustainably in my negative thinking? And therefore, when we speak about these various powers which will lead to transformation, we are of course speaking here of the practice of yoga, where every day I take time out to go into deep silence, but not just superficially and artificially. I also need, along with the experience of silence, I need a very clear recognition of where my problems are. What are the roots of my problem? And I need a very clear recognition of this foundation of low self-worth and how it is expressing itself in me, in my personality. It can express itself very differently in different personalities. The low self-worth can express itself as an inferiority complex, that is quite obvious. But the low self-worth can also express itself as a superiority complex. There is no such thing as a superiority. What is there, it's a complex. That means it is not reality. And now psychology tells us that superiority is basically an overcompensation for inferiority. Deep inside, I'm feeling inferior. I don't like that experience. And therefore, I overcompensate. I develop this larger-than-life image of myself. I inflate, I pump up air into those competencies and skills I have, and I create this big image, and I feel superior. But underlying that is still the emptiness and the experience of inferiority. So it doesn't matter which way it manifests itself. The complex is a complex. And I need to recognize in myself, where is it coming from? What are those things on which my validation is dependent? Identify them very clearly. But if I just stay with that, it's a very negative experience. Then I just see myself as useless, worthless, clinging to people, clinging to things, chasing after various desires and all sorts of things in the world. It doesn't really help. And therefore, when I shift to a spiritual perspective, that Srimat that we speak of, an elevated point of view, where I see that, yes, I have allowed myself to become like this, but that is not who I really am. And I emerge the experience of the soul, I emerge the original and eternal connection of the soul with God. And this is a sort of an assertion of the original self. And in that experience, I can talk to myself and I can tell myself, I'm thinking about, say for example, I'm sitting and I'm thinking about someone has been nasty to me, or someone has been unfair to me. Then I just bring up the experience and I tell myself, who is controlling you? Who's controlling you here? You like to be controlled by others? Talk to yourself, assert yourself in the right way, not over others, but bring out the eternal self. I will not allow myself, I don't want to allow myself to be controlled by other people and situations. Sorry. You hate me? Wonderful. I will not allow that to influence me to hate you in return. See, I regain my self-worth. If you hate me and I hate you back, I'm losing my self-worth. You're controlling me. You're unfair to me? Wonderful. No problem. I understand you. I will be very fair to you in return. Because I know you're working from a space of insecurity. And I can feel compassion for you. My self-worth is back. See, I'm free. I'm liberated. Amidst all the problems, I can experience myself to be liberated. I had a wonderful experience once. One of my clients from many years ago, young girl, lot of problems. And her issue was relationships, you know, validation in relationships. Very intelligent girl. She was the topper of the university and everything. But people and relationships, she is nothing if others don't tell her they love her. And, you know, they care for her. And some very bad experiences in relationships, so completely shattered, self-esteem completely shattered. She comes for counseling, many sessions, nothing is working, tried all sorts of things, nothing is working at all. And then I said, okay, let's try and explore her religious beliefs. And she was a Christian by faith. And so we started exploring her religious belief. And some, you know, I already was practicing meditation in some way at that point. So then I asked her, okay, so what is your relationship with God? Mm. Very simple. Mm. That's one of the first questions we are taught in Raja Yoga meditation. What is your relationship with God? Okay, so I said, let's try this on her. Mm. Let's see how it goes. She said, well, I used to pray a lot before. I don't pray so much now because I'm trapped in so much of negativity. I don't pray so much. I said, okay, but how did you ever pray when you were praying to God? How did you relate to God? And she was from a Catholic tradition, a very strong Catholic tradition. She said, well, I always see him as my father, as an old man sitting on a throne in the sky somewhere. And I see him as my father. I said, okay, then we went into a little discussion. Okay, so how do you think God is? And she said, well, he's benevolent and he's powerful and he's all these things. I said, so you see yourself as a child of God? She said, yes, I see myself as a child of God. And I said something very simple. I never knew it would work so well. I said something very simple. I said, your father is powerful. You have a right to what belongs to your father. How is it that you experience yourself to be weak? She said, I never thought of it that way. And we sort of spoke a little bit, and then she left. And then she came back after a week, and she had an amazing transformation. I said, what did you do? She said, nothing. I went, after the session, I went to play basketball. And whilst I was playing basketball, there was just one thought in my mind constantly, that God is my father.
Mm.
He is powerful. I am his child. I am also powerful.
Mm.
I don't need all this. I don't need people telling me I am good. I don't need people doing nice things for me. I don't need all that because I have him with me. And she said that assertion of that relationship with the Supreme and that strength that she felt from that relationship helped her so much in that transformation. So this is an assertion. Coming back to myself, taking the support of that connection with the higher being to return to my own inner state of self-respect. And then I have some tools with which I can deal with negative thoughts through the assertion of the self. Any questions? Any thoughts? Yes?
What do you do if you come to the point where you maybe realize some of your negative thoughts and where they're coming from, so you don't just have them and you're stupid and everyone else is stupid. And you come to that point where you know why you have the thoughts, but you can't really transcend them. What do you do about that? Because you can still realize that they're bad, but then still hang on to them.
You're right. This is where, for that, firstly, as Praveen and some others were mentioning, there is probably something I'm getting out of hanging on to those thoughts.
Yeah, but even if you know what you're getting out of it.
You know what you're getting out of it, and you're still hanging on to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I probably need to seriously work on assertion of the self. A real assertion of the self. What is happening then is I'm probably missing the power of realization. I understand it at an intellectual level, but I haven't really experienced, one, the damage I'm causing to myself through that. I haven't really experienced it deeply. Otherwise, I would work on transforming it. I understand it intellectually, but I haven't experienced it deeply. And therefore, I need the power of experience. I need realization. And for that, the practice of yoga can many times help us in getting into that realization of what I am doing to myself, that deep silence, and getting in touch with the negative aspect, of course, also, of what I am doing to myself, but also understanding that is not enough. So that is something I have to work consciously on myself repeatedly every day. This is where spiritual practice comes in. And the other thing is, if I start, instead of trying to remove that, if I start replacing that behavior with something positive, something constructive, over a period of time, as I start experiencing this positivity within myself, I will feel from deep within that I need to get rid of this because it cannot coexist with this state of mind. So instead of sometimes focusing on that, I need to focus on something else that is positive and develop that. And if I keep focusing on that, this will automatically get weakened. One of the problems of transformation that we sometimes experience is we focus on removing the negativity without filling ourselves with positivity. It doesn't work. What it actually does is it reinforces the negativity. Because again and again I'm thinking about it. It is good to recognize that the negativity is there. But instead of trying to remove it, let me work with filling myself with positive experiences of the soul, positive experiences of my relationship with God, positive experiences of my relationship with other human beings. And as I keep filling myself with this, automatically I start feeling myself that, this is not right, this is not healthy, and I can do away with this. But I need that strength, yes. Does that in some...
Yeah,
okay. Yes?
According to Raja Yoga, what is God?
God is a point of light, a point of energy. There is no physical form that we have for God in Raja Yoga. Just as a soul is a concentration of energy to infinity. You concentrate something to infinity, it's a point, right? But it's not a point like that. It is a point that is infinite. It doesn't end, unending. And so if you were to represent it, you would show it as a point. But it's not like a point, but it is a point that is infinite. That's the soul. And the Supreme, God, is also, we refer to God also as the Supreme Soul. So he's a soul, but he doesn't come into the cycle of birth and rebirth as we do. And therefore he is supreme, and therefore he's always full. So it's just that understanding of light and energy.
But it's also, it seems compatible with the kind of Catholic understanding, for example, of God or...
as the Father. It is also compatible with Islam. I come from a Muslim background. I've never had any issues accepting the understanding of God as light, because God as light is a common thing that we see in the Judaic family of religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. God as light is a very incorporeal, no physical form, light and energy. So it's very easy for the Judaic people from a Judaic tradition to understand that. But also from the Eastern traditions, for example, Buddhism, or Buddhism, of course, doesn't speak so much about God. But Hinduism, the ancient temples of India, they don't have any physical image.
Mm-hmm.
They are just the image of a flame, oval-shaped image of a flame.
Mm-hmm.
So in ancient religions, it is there. It's not so difficult to relate to that. One of the efforts that Raja Yoga, the philosophy of Raja Yoga, makes is to create some sort of a common platform for people of all cultures and religions to practice spirituality.
Mm.
So, this is one of those understandings. Yes, you were saying something, I think.
Well, I was thinking about that I have just started to try to meditate, and I come at your school on at Thursdays.
Yes.
And I would say that it stressed me a lot that I have one more thing to worry about, that I have to put time off to the meditation.
Yeah.
I really feel stressed by it. It's down at the table in my living room. I have a note that
yeah.
I'm going to do it one time. Thursday.
Yeah.
And I really...
You want to stop.
I managed to do it.
Yeah.
Week,
yeah.
And I'm not sure I will do it the next week.
It's creating too much stress.
Yeah, it's stress a lot.
Do you?
I am a very stressed person. That's my problem.
Yeah, okay.
So I would rather relax and take a nap.
Tell me something. Why do you want to meditate? What is your motivation? Because you're very stressed.
And this is doing me more stressed.
Now, if you start using meditation, like many times, people use going to a holiday as a stress relief. Yeah? I want to go to Mallorca. And then I create so many plans to have a good holiday that itself can be very stressful.
Exactly.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So, if I use meditation in the same way, I will be stressed.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, meditation is not stress relief.
That's what I feel.
Let's put stress relief, relaxation, everything aside. Let's not take it as a, I have to do something now. This is the next thing I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have to do it at all.
What?
I don't have to do it at all. But you see, when you say, I don't have to do it at all,
what?
You are already in a meditative state.
Yeah, then I will relax.
Precisely. Precisely. But don't really take it, if I take it as another activity I have to do, I'm bound to feel that stress. I'm bound to feel that stress. If I see it as just a space that I can create to just be by myself, I will not feel that stress. Let's not take it as another activity. It doesn't help. I've done it.
Anyway, I'll find out next Thursday. I will still, and I will try. I will do it, and I will perhaps understand next time.
Certainly.
And so on. So I don't think we should use more time.
Okay,
my,
fine.
My case now.
Great. Anything else quickly before we have a short meditation? Anything? Anyone else wants to say anything or share anything? Yes.
Done in one's heart,
of being negative and embracing in half.
Yeah, acceptance. You mean to say acceptance of the reality?
Yes.
Yeah, very true. Without that, meditation won't work anyway. If I'm going to deny the negative reality, it will be difficult for me to work with transformation. Obviously, I have to transform something that is existing, which is not necessarily positive. So the acceptance is inclusive. That has to come. But then I can't get just stuck there. I have to move beyond that by emerging the experience of the eternal self. As we understand. Okay, thank you very much. We'll have a little meditation before we... Once again, I allow myself to relax completely. And I turn my attention inwards. Going deep within myself once again to connect with the source of my being, the soul, the spirit, the point of infinity. The source of life and consciousness. This physical body, my costume, through which I express myself and experience this world around me. And I, the master of this costume, the master of my life and destiny, just a point of infinity. Stabilized in this experience of being the eternal spirit. Once again, I go beyond this physical world of matter, beyond the earth, the moon, the sun, and the stars, beyond space and time, to that dimension of light. To the abode of the Supreme. And I see myself once again in the presence of the Supreme. The infinite source of peace and power. Feel this power flowing into me. emerging, the deep self-worth of the spirit. Recognizing that to feel worthy, I just need to be me. In my original and eternal form of the soul. A being of peace. A child of the Supreme. And in this consciousness, I allow myself to emerge and feel the original perfection of the spirit. Full, complete, contented. Sparkling under the light of the Supreme. And holding on to this light and this experience of deep inner fullness and contentment, I allow myself to return back to this physical costume of the body, and I find myself once again seated deep inside the brain, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. I, the soul, a being of light, a being